Envy in particular, because it's such a complex emotion that has all these different components, tells you a lot of different things.
You're listening to Good is in the Details. I'm Gwendolyn Dolsky.
And I'm Rudy Sallow.
And this is the podcast where we learn what we didn't know in the spirit of Socrates, all with the aim of a more knowledgeable life, a happy life, a good life. In this episode, this really, really fascinated me because in the history of philosophy, we don't talk about emotions all that much. Everything is about science, objectivity, reason. Well, I'm overdoing it. I guess the existentialist didn't. But today, we're talking about the philosophy of envy with philosophy professor Dr. Rotasi. I heard about her book on another podcast, and I thought she was so fascinating, and I reached out to her, and I'm like, hey, let's talk about envy.
Yeah, this is a really important episode because we get real on this episode, and we get really human on this episode. We talk about envy, not in any kind of a, you know, horrible, shameful, something to be embarrassed about, something that makes you less of a human being. We talk about it objectively. And I think that that's a rare way to talk about a topic that most people really don't even want to admit that they do feel envy, that they do feel jealousness. To feel envy and to feel jealousy is to be human. And we explain mm-hmm. that on this episode.
Absolutely. I didn't know that there was a positive way to look at envy. So it's not all negative, but I think, you know, Rudy, with our Catholic school upbringing, like we learned that envy is one of the deadly sins. And like I said, philosophy doesn't talk about it that much other than maybe Aristotle mentions to stay away from it. So what Sarah's done here is look at the possibilities of if you are struck with envy, if you are experiencing that, reflect and what it is telling about you. It's a really interesting delve into this very specific emotion that can actually be a guide to living well when you understand it. So on that note, let's talk about the philosophy of envy. Sarah, welcome to Good is in the Details. We are going to discuss your work on envy with a philosophical lens. I'm really enjoying your work. I am intrigued by this idea that not all envy is bad. So a lot of us grow up with thinking that envy is problematic, and we also mix up envy and jealousy. And I really love this breakdown of how it's possible for envy to be part of the good life. But maybe let's back up and say, how are you defining envy in the first place? And maybe why is this a question for philosophy?
First of all, thank you for having me. I was interested in envy since an early age, precisely because it has such a bad reputation. And that is actually the reputation that it has had for most of the history of philosophy. Envy is often presented in the Christian tradition as a deadly sin. And in many other cultures and religions, it's considered to be a vicious attitude to have. But if we look at how it's defined in social psychology, we find usually a more neutral approach. Envy can be defined as an aversive, in the psychological sense, which means something like painful or unpleasant. So it's an aversive emotion, it's an unpleasant emotion that is connected to a perceived that arises in response to a perceived inferiority vis-a-vis with regard to a similar other. And that motivates me to overcome this perceived disadvantage or inferiority. So let me give you an example, because this sounds like a very complicated definition. Imagine that I am a student in a classroom, and I see that my close friend has received an A, and instead I got an A minus. So I feel that I am doing less well, I'm doing worse than my friend. And because he's my friend, he's my same age, he's in the same classroom, he's a similar other. Oh, and one thing I forgot to say about the definition is that this perceived inferiority or disadvantage has to do with the domain of self-importance. So imagine that I'm a good student, I care about having good grades. And so the fact that my friend or this person who's similar to me has gotten a better grade makes me feel bad because I care about good grades. And therefore, I feel this emotion that motivates me to overcome this disadvantage, this inferiority. And that can happen in two ways. We can say for sure, level up. I can either try to become as good as my friend and get an A next time, or I might feel like I have to level down, pull them down to my level. And so somehow maybe I wish that my friend got a less good grade, or perhaps I act in a way that makes my friend get a lower grade next time. And we can think of similar situations in you know, with a work colleague or other situations like that.
I love this because I really, your work is so eye-opening for me. I had never really considered how envy is only possible when you're perceiving the person is of a similar level as you, or they're in the same range. So you can't be envious of somebody who is way outside of your orbit, and you won't be envious of somebody who is you perceive to not be anywhere near your orbit or beneath you. So envy is only possible if it's somebody who has some sort of a similar framework or position, and then they've achieved something and you're thinking that could be me.
Right. And I mean, this similarity, first of all, it's a perceived similarity, right? Mm-hmm. It's in the eye of the beholder. So it's possible that, you know, that I'm shooting too high in considering someone in my same comparison class. This kind of actually happens systematically. Upward comparison often is systematically a little too high because we tend to think of ourselves as a little better than mm-hmm. we actually are. So an external observer, so imagine that I'm envious of my colleague who has achieved a lot in my field. And I'm envious because I think, oh, you know, that could be me. That should be me in more malicious situations. But then I talk to someone else who's in the same field, and, you know, maybe they don't tell me, but they think, oh, well, you know, actually, this person is so much better than you. Of course, they got those accolades and achievements. But what matters is that it's in my eyes, right? And so that's how sometimes we can envy people who are, for instance, celebrities or, you know, movie stars or whatever. Or, you know, maybe we envy the rich. And there is a question of, you know, can you envy someone who's much, much richer than you? That seems to be a counterexample to this idea that envy can only be felt towards similar others. But actually, once you kind of dig deeper in the perception that the agent has of the situation, you realize that they're seeing the other person as similar to them in some relevant respects. And so that's how you can account for situations in which it doesn't seem from an external perspective that there is a lot of similarity. But in fact, in the eye of the person who feels envy, there is.
I like this idea of how it is possible that when you experience it, that it's a pause for reflection of where it is that you think you should be. I think that that's fantastic. because I'd always associated it as bad, and I never thought of it as a possible tool or mechanism for dissecting one's own goals and what one wants out of life.
Correct. And it's actually really informative. I mean, all emotions are informative upon self-reflection, right? Upon reflection and self-reflection. But envy in particular, because it's such a complex emotion that has all these different components, tells you a lot of different things, right? First of all, it tells you how you see yourself compared to another person. And perhaps you might, you know, a lot of times envy masks itself because, again, there's a lot of stigma associated with it, but also because, you know, it tells you something that you might not want to know about yourself. So one, it tells you, if you examine your emotion correctly, that you perceive yourself to be inferior to this person, that you consider this person similar to you in some respect, that you care about something that perhaps you were not aware of, right? Maybe you find yourself envying your friend because, you know, she wears cool clothes or something, and maybe you don't like to think of yourself as someone who cares about fashion. And then you realize that you do. Or perhaps upon further investigation, you realize, well, it's not the fashion that matters, is that with those clothes, she feels so self-confident and I don't, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes you have to dig a little deeper to see what exactly is going on. It might not be completely apparent from the start, but envy does tell you a lot of things about yourself.
You wrote that the perception of control matters in determining the type of envy. And then you go on to say that there are four types of envy. Could you explain those four types of envy?
Yeah, there are two variables, what I call the variables of envy, that have been investigated somewhat separately up to now by two different literature. Psychologists have focused on perception of control. And the idea is that when you feel like you can control the outcome, and namely, you can control whether you can improve your situation, then you tend to have a more amicable attitude toward the other person, and you're motivated to level up. Also because it makes sense, right? Because you think, you know, you see that this person is doing better than you, and you think you can do what they're doing, right? The other person functions as a model of sort, and so you want to level up. But if you feel like the situation is beyond your control, you can't overcome this disadvantage. And again, whether that's true or not, that's not quite the point, because it depends on how you see the situation. Then you tend to develop a feeling of hostility toward the other person. Perhaps you think it's an injustice that this person is doing better. And then you want them to lose their advantage. You want to level down, because again, you don't think you can level up. So it's reasonable, right, that you just only think the only possibility is for them to level down. So that's one variable. But philosophers are interested in values, and they tend to talk more about what it is that you care about. And this starts, I think, already with Aristotle, who notices that when you care about this good or advantage for its own sake, then you're really motivated to get it, right? The point is not that this other, the fact that this other person has it, this is more like a foil. It's a litmus test. It tells you this good can be obtained, and you really care about that good, right? You really want that better job, that better grade, you know, that self-confidence. And so you want to level up. But if what really bugs you, what is the source of your pain, so to speak, is that this other person, this rival, has this good, then that's what you care about the most. And so you want them to lose that good. And so this is what I call focus of concern. And because these two variables are largely independent, they don't correlate, then we can intersect them and have four kinds of envy. So we have emulative envy, which is when we care about the good for its own sake. I want to become more self-confident. That is important to me. Or I want to do well in school. That's something I care about. And I think I can achieve that goal. Then I'm going to work toward emulating the envy. But even if I care about the goal and the good, but I don't think I can do it, perhaps I feel too insecure, then I don't want them to lose the good, but I feel this kind of sad, dejected kind of envy, which is inert. It doesn't produce anything positive for me. It's a sort of self-defeating attitude, but it just brings me to, you know, sulk in a corner instead of self-improve as emulative envy does. Now, if instead I don't care for the good for its own sake, but just because it, you know, it bugs me that this other person, this rival has it, perhaps, you know, it's not a friend in the initial case, it's a frenemy, someone who has always been doing better than me, so I've developed a rivalry toward them, then if I feel confident that I can steal the good, right, in some way or other, and of course that happens with some situations, but not others, you know, imagine a little child who wants the toy that the other kid has. Well, that's stealable, right? You can take it away from them. And that's aggressive envy, which is a very kind of obviously immoral emotions to have. And finally, sometimes, however, the good cannot be stolen. And in that case, the only thing I can do is to spoil it. To go back to the example of the child, perhaps the teacher is looking at me, and also they know whose toy that is. I can't steal it without repercussions, but maybe I can, it's broken. I didn't mean to do it. It was an accident. So you didn't get the toy, but you have spoiled the good, and because the other person also doesn't have it anymore. And so these are different ways of leveling down that I think cannot be conceptually distinguished unless we have both variables at play.
Something you said here is just making me think about the power of envy, the negative. What do you think? Is that being used as a tool for like marketing and social media? Because I'm wondering if marketing and social media would be as effective if there wasn't this understanding of a negative sense of envy.
So I actually think as far as I understand the way that marketers and advertisers use envy, they are actually trying to elicit positive envy, what in psychology used to just be called benign envy, and which I call emulative envy because I add that second variable. So, and in fact, I think it's not a coincidence that I think a lot of the psychologists who started to think about this benign envy are often in departments that in marketing departments, because what advertisers want is not that, you know, is they want you to buy stuff, right? They want you to get what other people have. And so actually they, I think, were the first to realize that you have this negative emotion. And we know that negative affect emotions, aversive emotions are very motivating. They stimulate you to do things in a way that positive affect emotions don't do. And so they want you to feel this kind of very negative in the sense of affect, so if that's what you meant, right? right? It's unpleasant. You have to do something about it. But then they don't want you to spoil someone else's good. That's not going to bring them any advantage. They want you to go and buy the perfume. They want you to go and buy that car, right? So a lot of advertisement basically are based on the existence of this positive kind of emotion. It says that the leveling up envy.
I see. Let's say with something with social media, is that working? Because it seems like there's this cycle of wanting to level up, but it's not yielding any kind of happiness or good feeling. So is there an illusion? Is there such a thing as an illusion of leveling up? Like so-and-so is having a fantastic trip, or they look perfect in their pictures, so I need to try and do that. Like, or no, I don't know. What do you think?
I think social media is complicated, right? Because there is a lot of things going on and different, and you know, I'm not an expert of social media, and especially I'm not an expert of how from the perspective of those who set them up so that they can make more advertisement money, right? So the idea is that you want to keep people clicking and commenting, right? I think actually some of the things that go on is this pretending to not be envious. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people, we actually know. So there's a lot of studies on social media and envy and mental health. So we know that actually people who spend a lot of time on social media and feel a lot of the more inert and aggressive kinds of envy fare a lot worse. Precisely because on social media also, most people post only the positive things. So it seems they also project this very curated, somewhat fake perspective on themselves. And so everyone's, what's the idiom? The lawn is always greener.
The grass is always greener on the other side
of the fence. And so we have all these virtual fences and gardens that seem luxurious and wonderful. But then of course we can't see the dry patches from our perspective. And so people, I think one problem is that people don't acknowledge their envy, right? There's the stigma. So they don't truly say in all earnestness, right, oh my God, I'm so envious. Why are you doing so much better than me? This is painful. I think actually if we did more of that, then it would be better, because the other person, if they're good friends, they will say, well, actually, you know, here's something bad that is going on in my life. And then we could have healthier, more authentic relationships, because everyone has something difficult happening in their lives.
Teasing that out, what you just said, I have to agree with you that that might be the best foot forward. Admitting that you're envious, or admitting that there's some, you know, like, oh my gosh, that's so awesome. I wish I could do that. Or I wish that was me.
Right.
What is the best formulation to have that to not put off somebody?
Right.
I know obviously you're a philosopher, but I think philosophers are like psychologists too. And obviously I'm asking because I'm asking for myself. I'm asking for others. I'm asking for the world at large. Like, I agree with you. I think it's okay to say what you're suggesting, but how? What's the best way to do that?
So first I want to say, I think it's a two-way street. And I think people who post about their successes also have responsibilities. And a lot of people, because they're afraid of malicious envy, and they do tend to say, I mean, the more kind of emotionally intelligent people, so not everyone, but the posters sometimes do talk about, oh, you know, I was so lucky. They try, or they acknowledge other people's contribution. They express gratitude. And so that is actually a way of fending off the worst kind of envy. But I think it would be also okay for the other people to, and also another thing that sometimes people do is that they also share their failures. There are some people who together, you know, academics, for instance, who talk about how many rejections they've had, right? And they make it transparent that the cost, that in order to succeed, you also have to fail many times. And so I think that's a responsibility all of us who talk about success have. But on the other end, so here's a thing that I consciously do. I rely on the fact that in English, people often use the word jealous to express a more benign kind of envy. So even though I actually talk about the difference between envy and jealousy in my writing, sometimes on purpose, I use the word jealous to convey the fact that I don't want the other person to lose what they have, because that's usually how the word is used. Or sometimes I actually, one thing that I do is that I will say I am envious with people, especially who, you know, maybe other philosophers who know my work. And I think one thing that I've noticed is that because I talk to people about my work and people know that there are different kinds of envy, my friends and family have started being more transparent about their envy. So I think there is a component really in spreading the word about the fact that envy is not all malicious.
And now a quick break to tell you about our sponsor for this episode of Good is in the Details. CLM Creations is a small woman-owned business with an innovative new hairstyling tool that Sherry, the founder, spent 10 years developing to give her thin, straight hair, body, and lift. It did everything that a diffuser attachment did for her and more, while being much easier to travel with. After her breast cancer diagnosis in 2020, Sherry decided that she wasn't going to let cancer beat her. Radiation treatment caused her hair to thin and break off while detangling. Because of this, she discovered that her new hairbrush could detangle and minimize further damage. She decided to manufacture and sell her patented hairbrush. The CLM Volumizer was born. The CLM Volumizer is a 3-in-1 hair tool that works as a diffuser, a brush, and styling device that will detangle and amp up the volume while creating natural-looking curls, beach waves, or straighter locks. Go to our show notes to get your link to CLM Volumizer and use offer code GOOD15 for a discount. And now back to the show.
Really quick, just to tease that out. So your you just said your family, or they're expressing that they're using the word jealous, or they're using the word envy. Has that had a negative impact at all? Has that had a positive impact?
I think it has had a positive impact. Okay. So for instance, with my partner, I've noticed this a lot, that since I started working on this topic, we are much more explicit with each other about when we feel envy. I think that's something that can be modeled. But and also one thing you can do is that, you know, I think it's different when you're just saying, I'm so envious. And when you say, I'm really happy for you, this is great, you deserve it, if you think they do deserve it. Or, this, you know, you don't have to necessarily say something you don't believe in. Maybe they were lucky, but you don't have to say, oh, it was just luck, right? You can say, I'm really happy for you. I have to say, though, I'm feeling a little envious, and here's why. And you can share your struggle, right? So there are ways of doing it so that it doesn't come off as just this, you know, I'm not even congratulating you. I'm just telling you that I feel bad about myself. That's not very nice. But there are more nuanced way of doing it. And then again, I think the other person also should be able to say, you know, I get it. You know, I would feel envious too. But here's what I did. Let me share, a path to success. So I think this is a two-way street. I think those who are envied, if they're envied for their success, they should share the recipe if they have one.
Yeah, I guess that's great. I mean, it's so interesting that we're talking about this topic, Gwen, because we literally were talking about social media posts yesterday and how like I've been struggling about like even posting about going out into nature and hiking because I'm just like, oh boy, I don't want to be one of those types of persons who, you know, is just posting when I have a nice day and I'm going out and doing stuff. And I want to be a responsible, that's it. I mean, I just came up with it. I want to be a responsible social media poster, right?
Yes.
I think that is a topic that needs to be discussed a lot more. And I love what you're saying and suggesting, Sarah. You are, you know, hitting the nail on the head. It's like, go ahead, post on social media, post your successes on social media, but figure out a way to do it whereby, you know, you talk about some of the struggles or you thank some of the people, or you do something where people just won't just sit there and be and just envious. Being envious isn't necessarily a bad thing as we're discussing today, but be a little bit more responsible. I think that's a really interesting notion that I don't think a lot of people are discussing these days. Because, I mean, the reality is, because right now, I know it's at the high courts, it's either at the Supreme Court or some of the courts. I'm sorry, I'm the lawyer here, but there are actually court cases about the responsibility of social media companies and their impact. And this is a very, very hot topic. You know, right now it's all self-regulated, right? Like we the people are the ones that post, we the people that are putting that stuff out there. And I do think that there should be this moral responsibility around social media posts that I think there should be a movement. And 2 days in a row now we're talking about this. It's a very interesting notion that you're bringing up, Sarah.
Yeah, there is, you know, there is a moral responsibility, I think, in everything that we do. And so that, of course, applies to our actions on social media. And one thing I wanted to add, so one thing that I particularly dislike is the humble brag.
Oh, yes.
And not
Wait, give me some details. I want to hear. I want to hear.
Well, so, you know, with that, you know, with academics, sometimes you have, and I don't know what would be the equivalent for other people. Maybe Gwen can help. But so things like, oh, I have so many invites to give talks. And I'm so tired about all the
traveling. I'm tired of all these books I'm being asked to write.
Right.
And talks.
Yes. And, you know, I get it. I also get it that there is a component. It doesn't need to be an intentional brag. Right? Maybe you really, from your perspective, you have so much success that, or, you know, imagine someone who posts, I mean, maybe, I don't know what younger people might do, but, you know, they have too many dates, right? Or something like that. There's so many versions of this.
I have so many dates. There's too many people in my DMs.
Too many people.
I can't handle all of this. Oh my God, that's hilarious. Right?
So there's going to be a lot of versions of that. And I think, again, audit yourself. Think about it a little bit. Should you put it in those terms? And also, you might want to put that part in that say, sorry, this is totally going to be an humble brag, or I know that I'm really lucky. So there are different ways of doing it, but sometimes people seem to be really not self-aware. And if, you know, and it makes a difference if you post it once, okay. But if you're the kind of person who's constantly complaining about, you know, how much your success is weighing on you, I'd rather have someone say, hey, this is so cool. I have so many talks I want to share with you all, or, you know, have, you know, I'm seeing so many person. My sex life is awesome. I don't know. Just be honest about it. Celebrate it, as opposed to just to talk about it in this indirect way and seemingly showing no awareness that other people are not as lucky as you, and they don't get to complain about these things because these things never happen to them.
So something that I'm picking up on that, you know, is making me reflect is that at first when I was reading your work, I was thinking about how I can reflect as a result of understanding more about envy. But I think the other advantage that ties into this is that when you do understand it, then you can have empathy or know how to respond to somebody else who is demonstrating envy, and then to respond with that responsibility. Because I know with Rudy and I mean, like, there are podcasts that have more success than us, and then there's podcasts that are working towards our level of success. And having an understanding of that transparency of all of the work that goes into what we've achieved is it's a joy to share, and also to let other people know that up on the surface, like through social media, it looks easy. We say, no, wait, this is all of the investment, all of the time, all of the meetings. These are the things that didn't work out. So when you having an understanding of envy, I think also makes you just a better friend and good citizen for when you're on the receiving end of that.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I remember, again, speaking of colleagues, right, who were successful, I remember a colleague of mine a while back who is someone who often shares their successes and they're doing really well. But I remember a long post of them where they were talking about the costs on their mental health and how much they didn't sleep much and they struggle with a lot of anxiety. And one of the reasons why they were so productive is that actually they had this sort of kind of manic bouts, right? And so they were very honest and vulnerable and talking about, look, there's many good things in my life, but here are the cost of those good things. And so there are always trade-offs, right? Very few people, I mean, even the person who's a genius will have some disadvantages in their life because of this kind of trait. So nobody succeeds without any cost. And so making those costs transparent and then being sympathetic to those who express their struggle is key. And one thing from a scholarly perspective, one thing that helps me is, one, knowing that envy is a cross-cultural emotion that has been found in every culture, and that it's very common in children before they learn how to hide it. So children are very transparent in their envy. You can learn a thing or two from them in this regard. And three, a lot of times people are not aware of their own envy. And so that makes it a little tricky in some way, right? Because you don't want to unmask them to themselves. But also it's helpful to tell people, look, you might not realize that you're envious and you only see other people's envy. But, you know, most of us at some point or other feel envy. And that's okay. It's a natural human emotion that is actually functional, and it helps us self-improve. It helps us. It does a lot of good things for us, even though it also has, of course, its risks. I'm not saying it does not have its risks. And
I love that you said that. I'm serious. Like, thank you for saying that, because every time I feel that little bit of envy or little bit of whatever, I feel like the biggest piece of crap on the face of the earth.
Right.
I mean, really. I mean, I really do. And then I just start beating myself up.
Right.
In a way, I'm leveling myself down in that, yeah. Like, I'm like, oh, you're such a horrible person. How could you mm-hmm. feel that way? How could you think that way? How could you, you know, all this? And then that just doesn't do anybody any good. The fact right. that you just said is that envy is a natural human emotion that should not bring you shame. The emotion in and of itself. Now, if you're taking action, if you're taking negative action on that exactly. envy and you're being spiteful or you're doing something negative as a result of that, that's a whole other story. But the fact that you feel that that envy is normal, I love that. I think that that's a message that needs to be put out there more. And I'm glad that you said that so clearly on here, because I think that will make people feel a lot better about themselves. Hell, it makes me feel better about myself.
Psychoanalysts know this very well. And in general, any kind of psychology, a psychological therapist, but especially psychoanalysts, because, you know, they also talk in the psychoanalytic literature, there is also a lot of discussion of the most difficult to admit kinds of envy, the envy we feel toward our siblings, our spouses, our children or parents, right? And those are the really tough ones that make you feel like a terrible person. But once you read this literature, you realize, again, that too is normal. We might have a really hard time to admit it or recognize it, but it happens. And there's, you know, it's not a terrible, it doesn't make you a terrible human being.
I want to get to this question about love. We love talking about love. I think a lot of stories or even reality TV, they work with this idea of jealousy and envy to get, you know, to get everybody all riled up and excited about love. And we normally think about love and envy as mutually exclusive, but in your book, you were saying that they are not incompatible. So I wanted to know if you could explore or explain what you mean by love and envy not being incompatible.
Right. I think that love and envy are two sides of the same coin. I think that they tend to arise in this, to thrive in the same conditions of similarity a lot of times. I mean, of course, it's true that sometimes opposites attract with regard to some personality traits. So for instance, extroverted sometimes get along with introverted in a couple, things like that. So there are some specific traits along which opposites attract. But in general, we actually tend to be friends and lovers with people who are similar to us with regard to background, values, activities that we enjoy, and so on. And because those are the same conditions in which envy thrives, remember, we feel envy towards similar others, then we are bound to feel envy toward those whom we love. I mean, it's just unavoidable. Now, there are some conditions that assuage envy. For instance, in romantic unions, we do tend to have a sort of bonding of identity to an extent, right? We form a we of some sort. And so it's a little easier to be happy for someone else's success because that also reflects on us a little bit. But you can also, you know, my partner is also an academic and a philosopher. And when we have sometimes competed for the same job or award. And so in those situations, our identities are very distinct, right? Our professional identities are distinct. And so when we're competing for something, there's bound to be some envy. And in friends, I think this is pretty common. And so I think from a descriptive perspective, they cannot be incompatible, right? They just happen at the same time. But from a normal, what philosophers would call normative perspective, from the perspective of how things should be, they are also compatible there in the sense that, again, not all envy is bad. And so even though when I love someone, usually I also want the best for them. I want them to thrive. I want them to be happy. And I can still, so for instance, if I'm the one who's envied by a loved one, I want to be a model for them so that they can emulate me. And again, I want to be generous and share my path to success. And I can even try to tolerate the less good kind of envy that they might feel at times, right? It happens. I might even feel some aggressive and spiteful jealousy towards someone I love. As Rudy said, provided I don't act on it, that's okay. And the other, and so as the person who's envied, I can say, hey, it must feel horrible now that, you know, I got this nice thing and you didn't get it, but maybe I can share it with you, right? And I can also just say, I get it. You know, you do not need to be around me right now. I understand it. So one of the things I talk about is baby envy. Sometimes we really want to have a biological child and we can't have it. And so if all our friends start having babies, that's not something I can easily emulate, right? Sometimes it's a matter of biology. So I can feel emulative envy, and I might feel that inert envy that I talk about in the book. And I might need to, you know, maybe I'm not going to hang out with all my friends who are new mummies and they are, you know, full of babies. And it's okay to say, you know what, this is really hard for me right now. I'm just going to hang out with my child-free friends for a while. And so we have to be compassionate and understanding. And it's envy can be a force for growth and self-improvement. But even when it's not, we should tolerate its manifestations within a loving, you know, a loving relationship. And again, as the person who envies, I think they should not hide their envy. It's going to fester. It's going to do bad things. If we let envy just be in our heart without ever acknowledging it, I think it's important to be transparent about it. But I think it's, again, it's bound to happen that we envy the people we love. And it doesn't need to be a bad thing, because we can try to shape our life and our goals so that we feel more emulative envy than other kinds of envy.
That's really helpful that, you know, when we do see some people pulling away or taking some time, is to actually be compassionate. But right. Sarah, let me ask you a question. If we suspect that envy is one of the reasons somebody is treating us badly, if they are disrespecting us, or if they're actually ignoring us or saying things to us that are untrue, what do we do? If we've got a really good sense of, if we know that somebody is being envious and they're being a really negative, bad person, like, do you just back away? Do you talk to them about it? And I'm sorry, I know you're a philosopher, not a psychologist, but I'm just curious.
Right, right.
If you've ever dealt with this or have any advice.
Yeah. So as you said, I do think that ultimately this is a matter of clinical psychology and psychotherapy. So don't take this as, you know, medical advice of any sort or any therapeutic advice of any sort. But my personal educated advice as someone who has dealt with it as a person and a philosopher is that it really depends on the relationship. Some relationships are deep enough and you care about them enough that you want to, I think, risk talking about it and even suggest and maybe say something like, look, you know, this thing has happened. If I were you, I would feel a little bit of envy. Is it possible that that's what's happening here? Because, you know, I would feel like that, right? And so sort of present it as, this is what I would feel. Might it be that this is happening with you? But I think in situations where the relationship is more superficial or we have good reasons, you know, we know the person well enough and we know that they are not that great at acknowledging what's going on in them, right? Or they might be too prone to shame and defensive mechanisms and it's not going to work out. In those cases, I think pulling back a little bit or as much as needed might be the only thing to do, because some people really react badly at the suggestion that they might be envious. And we might, again, if the relationship is somewhat superficial, I think it might just be back to, you know, sever that that relationship and accept that perhaps that's not a good combination. Because I do think that envy can be very toxic, and maybe, you know, maybe we can take comfort in the fact that relationship wasn't going to work out very well. I do think it's tricky, I'll be honest. I do think that some relationships, I can think of people where I would never talk to them about this because I am 100% sure that they would deny it and it would just make things worse, and it's just better to back off.
So envy is human. That is universally human. But the expression of it, could that change from culture to culture? I mean, what I'm thinking about in a heterosexual marriage, that if a woman is experiencing envy of her husband's success, that expression might be very different than if a man is envious of his wife's success. So even though envy is universally human, the expression of it or our ideas of what a role is or how to be a man or how to be a woman could be so toxic that normal emotion of envy could have really severe consequences.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. In fact, even the four kinds of envy that I talk about, I explicitly say that it's a culturally local model that is shaped by contemporary social psychological evidence, that is shaped by observations in a certain kind of industrialized Western, in a broad sense, society. I do think that actually it I speculate that it has a little bit more application than that, but I do not mean to say that it applies to all cultures equally. The way, for instance, even within the West, the way within in which ancient Greeks felt what they call phtonas and zelos, these emotions, it was quite different, actually. And I talk a little bit about that in the appendix of the book. We know that and as you said, even within our contemporary US context, there's going to be, for instance, I actually think that if you have a heterosexual marriage where the partners don't share ideals of equality, it's actually possible that you will not have some of this issue. Perhaps they will not even experience certain kinds of envy because they don't see each other as similar and as competitors. Or perhaps, here's the thing that I think what might happen, a woman might envy the husband because she does implicitly think of herself as equal, but perhaps if she's steeped in a very patriarchal or sexist culture, she doesn't explicitly think that. She doesn't have these explicit beliefs. She doesn't realize that she thinks that she's entitled to the same treatment. And so this envy, she might not ever understand what she's feeling, and she might be feeling maybe some kind of resentment, and these emotions might be completely opaque to her. And so I think they are likely to manifest in some indirect ways, perhaps some forms of anger. And so for these emotions to even be acknowledged, there would need a sort of, you know, consciousness raising so that she realizes, look, we actually, it's okay to have the same aspirations. Something. So I think there's going to be a lot of interesting variations, and some emotions I think will fail to be recognized, not because envy is perceived as shameful, but because you cannot even perceive yourself to be an equal to the other person.
Sarah, this time just flew by. I am so grateful for you. I had never thought about looking at envy from a philosophical lens, and your work really intrigued me. And really, if you're doing more work like this, we would love to have you back. We could talk for like 3 hours. This was fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
I agree. And thank you for playing armchair psychologist. Yes. Yeah, I clearly have a lot of mental issues and questions. And I mean it from the bottom of my heart that statement that you made, I think, is really important, that to feel envy is a perfectly normal human emotion. And I think the more people that can just accept that, I think that'll actually result in better relationships. Yeah.
Yes, I do believe that. I also do believe, though, that we also have a moral responsibility to feel the best kind of emotions, in this case, the best kind of envy, right? So the work is not, I mean, there's a work that has to be done with acknowledging the emotion, but then you also have to shape the conditions of your life and your values and the way you think about yourself and the way you relate to others in order to make that emotion functional and not, and neither immoral nor, you know, counterproductive for you. So it's a lot of work.
Yeah, that's really great.
Yeah,
thank you,
Sarah. We appreciate the insight. We're all about what does it mean to live life well, and having an understanding of envy just fits perfectly with that, what it means to live the good life. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Good is in the Details is produced by Dr. Gwen Landowski and Rudy Salo. If you're enjoying the pod and you're listening on Spotify or Apple, please scroll down to the bottom and hit that 5-star review. You can follow us on Instagram, Good is in the Details Pod. Take a screenshot of this episode or your favorite episode and tag us. We would love to hear from you. Good is in the Details is also sponsored by AvonmoreInc.com. You've heard me talk about this before. It was a small business that started in the 90s and grew to an international bridge sensation. Who plays bridge? If you have a family member or a friend, or if you play, you gotta go to AvonmoreInc.com. They have everything you need for your next bridge party. Tallies, coasters, smart playing cards, which are also great for kids. Go to AvonmoreInc.com and let them know that Good is in the Details sent you. Remember to also check out our show notes for your offer code for CLM Creations. I have a couple of friends who ordered this and they are in love. It is the perfect gift, or perfect for you for when you are on the go. It's a diffuser brush all in one. Go to CLM Creations and use the offer code in our show notes. Remember, when you support our sponsors, you're also supporting Good is in the Details. Check out patreon.com, also linked in the show notes, to support the pod and join our book club and find out about an upcoming contest that we have. Listeners going to receive a gift. We'll let you know more about that in the next episode. All right. Until next time, bye.